Welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking Caris LeVert's injury, and the reason I'm not crying through this intro is that it wasn't quite as bad as it seemed. We thought this was going to be extremely depressing, but we found out that Caris LeVert will likely be back this season, and the injury does not appear to be career altering. We are getting into Caris LeVert's injury, the implications of it, and just an immense sense of relief that he is, for the most part, all right. Next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. And I'm joined, as always, by the great, the likely very relieved, and last night the horrified, Josh Bass. Josh, I remember you texting me that Caris LeVert suffered just a season-ending injury. You were watching the game live. I was taping it. I immediately turned it on. You texted me immediately after it happened. I rewinded it about 2-3 minutes. I watched Caris airball that three and then just sprinting back down the court, goes for a block. And you couldn't necessarily see the foot twist like it did on the replay, but you heard him scream, and immediately the towel goes over his leg, and then you see the replay, and it was very reminiscent about what happened to Gordon Hayward last year. And I was getting flashbacks of when Jeremy Lin got hurt the night immediately after Hayward getting hurt. It was just this horrific start to last season. And then it kind of felt like the Nets whole franchise went crashing down in one moment.
Yeah, I mean, it just was such a horrific instance to a guy who's just a great basketball player, but also an awesome human from everything we've heard, and someone that everyone, all of his teammates, former teammates, Michigan alumni, just really have rallied behind over the last couple of years. And I mean, the broadcast, I think, after it happened, Ryan Rucco and Sarah Kustak, who were doing the game, I don't think there was a peep from them for the next 5 minutes. It kind of just was a haunting feeling as the medical staff went to work on Caris LeVert, putting towels over his legs. And both the fans at the game, Minnesota's team, and the Nets and Caris's teammates kind of just stood around waiting to see if it really was as bad as it appeared on TV.
Yeah, no, it felt like something genuinely traumatic had happened, and you saw Hollis Jefferson, he was crying during the free throws. One of the shots that stuck with me, and maybe before we go further down this road, we should brighten everyone's day up a little bit, and I'm sure as everyone listening already knows, but if you don't, I'm happy to give you this just astoundingly good news. The report from the Nets team's orthopedist, Dr. Martin O'Malley, noted that LeVert was diagnosed with a subtilar dislocation of his right foot, an injury that, again, nothing definitive yet. The speculation is that it'll keep him out around 2 months, but the consensus is that he will return this season, and at least on initial look, the most likely spot for that would be after the All-Star break, barring any setbacks, which again can happen quite easily with injuries this severe. But the big note there is minimal ligament damage. And again, it was just so reminiscent of what happened to Hayward. I mean, I'm sure Josh, and I mean, based on your text, this was your first thought. My first thought was, again, this was just going to be career altering in the way everyone was reacting. It was kind of implicit that it would be.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, Hayward, I think, LeVert's looked terrible on TV, but I think Hayward's looked a bit worse. The thing was, though, just the reaction that everyone had around him. I mean, they immediately knew that something had gone horribly wrong, and unfortunately, it didn't go as wrong as it appeared. But just whenever you have announcers and everyone on the court just, like, not looking, and they immediately bring up the script, it's always a bad sign.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say before we got into the update, it was like that really got me when they cut to everyone on the bench just crying, everyone silent. Beginning of the second half, I think like the opening shot on the broadcast was Joe Harris on the court, and you can see he was literally wiping tears out of his eyes. And you forget these guys are, I mean, on this Nets team, they're really young. They're our age for the most part, or a few years older. I mean, in some cases, quite a bit older, but for the most part, these are still kids to a degree. And it's just, that's to see like a guy like that, your brother, go down. And like, obviously it was such an emphasis. I know Zach Lowe, who said he's been hopefully it still comes out in some capacity. He said he was working on a feature on LeVert, and you heard it from Adrian Wojnarowski. You heard it from every Nets reporter. You heard it again and again from Ryan Rucco and Sarah Kustak. It's something we note on this podcast a lot. Just the heartbreak was due in large part to what kind of respect everyone has for Caris LeVert. And you even saw guys like Paul George like reaching out to Caris over Twitter, and obviously the implication was again that this was an injury that was more severe than what we found it out to be. But it was still kind of it was nice to be reminded that the NBA is such a community, and Caris, who is, I mean, as Kenny Atkins put it, the heart and soul of our program, he's a guy who's just so deserving of that kind of love and thoughts and prayers in this kind of situation. So I thought, I know this is, again, just not, none of this is basketball centric, but I thought that was kind of that was nice to see for me, just how much respect he has across the league already.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for either Skip Bayless or Will Kane, one of these other hot take artists, and I'm saying that in quotes, for them to say that this is actually good for Caris LeVert, considering he's only going to be out for a couple months most likely, and that it's good for his brand and awareness. But obviously, it's still terrible. But I feel like that's a take that I'm going to see at some point.
Yeah, I really hope not. I might delete my social media if it comes to that.
Well, that might be good for everyone.
Yeah, no, I know. So you're saying
they need to bite the bullet just to get you out of there.
Right. No, that's, yeah, no, they should think about it. All right. Yeah, I'm almost okay. Like, unless I don't know if you have anything to add. I'm almost all right. Wrapping up our first segment there. I'm glad we can talk about the implications for the Nets going forward in the next segment, the implications for the rotations. But just as far as the pure emotional reaction, this was going to be a if we didn't have that news, this was going to be just an extraordinarily depressing podcast. And it still is, because I still kind of feel the weight of just even like the hypothetical, because I genuinely believe that in the worst case scenario of Caris being out for a year and maybe coming back and never quite being the same guy, or him taking like a year and a half to be the same guy, I really think that would have been a franchise altering moment for Brooklyn. And as is, it's extremely bad, but it's not quite on that level.
Yeah, I mean, if let's say it was a Gordon Hayward like injury in terms of the severity, that's putting the Nets back significantly, because best case, he's coming back to start the 2019-20 season, and we've obviously seen with Hayward, he's super rusty, and that would be LeVert's fourth year. He's going to be a restricted free agent in 2020, and obviously the way he's playing, it's a guy that the Nets want to kind of lock up under a long-term contract. And if, best case, he returns in a couple months, we'll see about that. We'll talk about that in the next segment, but if he was only able to return for next year, it would have put the Nets back, because they need to see that he's the player that he was before giving him that contract. And it really does halt a lot of the progress that they've made this season and the incremental steps they've taken in the last couple of years.
Yeah, we'll get into this next segment, but just the way, I mean, I didn't get to watch the full Nuggets game, but I went back and watched the highlights, and even watching the first half in this game, just the way all these guys were starting to play together offensively, you got the feeling they were really building something. And again, LeVert, I mean, even missing 2 months or 3 months is going to be extremely harmful for that, but him potentially missing a year of basketball, that would have been deadly. All right, we'll take our first break. We'll come back and we'll get more into the basketball implications of Caris LeVert, who is thankfully, in the grand scheme of things, all right. Him missing the next couple of months. Welcome back in to the Locked On Nets podcast. We are sticking with the Caris LeVert injury. Josh, obviously, I think you could immediately, I mean, obviously a lot of it was just the emotional weight of Caris being out. And I think Kenny Atkinson phrased it concisely and in the best possible way, saying nothing else that happened in the game in the grand scheme of things was all that relevant after the injury. But I just think you could immediately see the difference Caris not being on the court made. And I just, with the way he started to play and just his ability to create for others, and I just think outside of Spencer Dinwiddie to a degree, you just don't have another guy that can manipulate a defense in the same way and get defenders moving and generate looks for a supporting cast that has obviously has some talent but just doesn't have that individual beat guys off the dribble juice. I do think this is going to just really, and I'm sure they'll find ways to adjust, but I think it could really be harmful to the Nets offensively going forward. And I know that's kind of like Captain Obvious, but I just think it's gonna have implications that are further reaching than maybe just LeVert's like 19 points a game.
Yeah, because he's the one guy on the team that really had a skill set to break guys down off the dribble effortlessly. I mean, Spencer does kind of the same thing, but LeVert's a bit more dynamic and I think can do it a bit more regularly. And we've seen that they can both come through in the clutch, but he has the skill set that's less easy to replicate. So obviously moving forward, huge hit to the Nets roster for the foreseeable future. I guess, what do you expect the starting lineup to be moving forward, kind of without Karis?
Yeah, you know, I haven't put that much thought into it yet. I wonder if they either slot Carroll or Hollis Jefferson in there. I would think it's much more likely they put Carroll in, just because you don't want to give up that much shooting in the starting lineup. And then Carroll, I mean, at least on paper, like, I don't know if he practically is, but just based on what he did last season, is a better shooter than LeVert. So at least that's kind of an artificial way to replicate some of what LeVert did off the dribble and just creating easy looks for teammates when you're playing with that much spacing. Even if you don't necessarily have the one-on-one individual talent, there are ways for guys to get to the rim. So, and guys like Dudley and Carroll just aren't total albatrosses every time they get the ball, and they can maybe create a little bit. So I could see them going that way, or maybe they flip the opposite direction and say, you know what, we're okay with a little bit less shooting. Let's just slot Hollis Jefferson in there, have that athletic ability, have someone else who can win off the dribble. I think initially it's going to be more likely they put Carroll in there.
Yeah, so I'm actually, I feel like I'm in the complete opposite frame of mind as you are. I think it's pretty obvious that it's going to be Dinwiddie going into the starting lineup. Because
I didn't even think about him. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, because you have to, there's three guys on this Nets team at this point that can really create their own shot, and that's D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Shabazz Napier. And Napier has been in and out of the rotation the last couple games since Damari Carroll came back. But what I'm thinking is that those two of those three are basically going to need to play together pretty much all the time. So move Dinwiddie into the starting lineup and then have Napier be the lead guard off the bench. And then over time, Damari Carroll will take Dudley's spot. So you'll have a starting five of Dinwiddie, D'Lo, Joe Harris, Damari Carroll, and Jared Allen, which I think is a pretty decent mix of defense. And also you have a lot of shooting on offense. And then guys like Rondé, Shabazz Napier, unfortunately Alan Crabb playing a couple minutes off the bench. And even Kurwitz might get some time now just because there's a dearth at the wing position.
Yeah, no, I think you're almost definitely right. I don't know why I wasn't even kind of considering Dinwiddie. I guess my only concern there was, I think in the past, and there are stretches where they played well together, but I've never, and maybe we just don't have a large enough sample size yet to say it definitively, but I am like kind of worried that D'Lo and Dinwiddie don't really make each other better when they're on the court. Like, and that can, this, the thing that could flip that is if D'Lo continues to be the spot up shooter he's looked like for long stretches this season. And it's so hard to tell, because he's had four or five games where he's just been absolutely electric, two different games where I think he's made at least six or seven three-pointers after last night's incredible performance by Russell. And then he's had these games where he looks like he's never shot a basketball in his life. So I'm kind of the opinion that if D'Lo is closer to a 38-39% three-point shooter, then you can, the shooting kind of cures all ills. You can make that duo work. But if D'Lo's more like a 33-36% three-point shooter, I think those two are going to struggle together. And obviously at this point for Brooklyn without Karis, there are only imperfect answers. There's nothing that is going to get you to the same heights, because he was frankly their best player. But to me, that is kind of the that's the skill that flips whether or not that lineup works.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you put a guy like Carroll or RHJ out there with the current remaining starters, it's really not fair to D'Lo, because he's the only guy in that lineup that can create his own shot. And we already know that he struggles with efficiency. So giving him that much of a workload, he's going to struggle. There's no doubt in my mind. And his best skill this year has been his catch and shoot three. So you're really taking that away. So I think that him and Dinwiddie could mesh together pretty well. We saw that Kenny Atkinson has gone to three guard lineups with Dinwiddie, D'Lo, and LeVert this year. I think it's worked decently. So I think they can play pretty well together. I'm excited to see that. And let's give Russell a bit of credit because he had an off game against Golden State, but he played really well against Denver, even though he wasn't out there for that last possession. And against Minnesota last night, I mean, the guy scored 31 points, hit 9 threes, looked really good in the first half. Honestly, after the LeVert injury, I couldn't even watch anything basketball-related in the second half. I was just so numb. But it seems like he had a good game and kept the Nets close. So we have to give him his props. I mean, we bash him when he plays terribly, and when he plays well, I have to give him some kudos. I still don't think he's a franchise guy or anything like that or a future All-Star, but he is showing that he can be a contributor to the team with his three-point shot.
Yeah, and again, it's just I mean, it's essentially – it's what I said 2 minutes ago, but – it's just all about, it's if he could find some kind of consistency. Like, you, obviously the games that he goes 9 for 15 are incredible, and you'll take that every time. But you'd prefer if he could consistently do 3 for 7, then go 9 for 15 one night, and then 1 for 6 like each of the next two. Like, the Nets need him to find some way to bring that consistency, because that's, I mean, frankly, like, as much as anything else, that's what LeVert was bringing to the table. He was playing well and finding ways to score night to night to night. And even when he wasn't efficient, his ability to get to the free throw line was so impressive. And obviously that's something that D'Lo has shown that he doesn't really bring to the table. So I think conversely, D'Lo has to be able to provide the skill that Karis doesn't have and be a consistently very good three-point shooter. And I don't know if we've seen enough to think that can happen. And especially when you lose someone like Karis, the shots are going to be harder that he's taking. But that to me, once again, is just the biggest factor for the Nets going forward.
Yep, and I think that, I mean, he's still struggling from two-point range, but it's great to see some progress because he was pretty much around 35% from his career on the three-point line. And even though it's a small sample size, it's nice to see him kind of break through that glass ceiling.
Yeah, and I think, again, just going back to talking about what Karis was bringing to the table, I think, like, the most depressing part about this for me was, especially when I thought, like, we weren't going to see him play basketball again for a year, was you could just tell he was really starting to get comfortable in his skill set. And it wasn't just his scoring ability. He's starting to get comfortable with how much gravity he has and how much he kind of manipulates a defense in different directions and how to take advantage of that. And I know that was something I mentioned earlier, but I just thought he was making some really smart passes in this game. Like, I remember there was a play where he had a pick and roll, and I think they double teamed him or someone was kind of scrambling back, and he just slipped this bounce pass into the center of the paint to Jared Dudley, and then Dudley had Dinwiddie, I think, or it might have been Russell. It was probably Russell, wide open in the opposite corner and just hit him for a three. But that play happened because Karis LeVert is getting so much respect from defenses at this point, and then Dudley just has this easy pass for a three-pointer. But it's all about how well LeVert's playing and his ability to leverage that, because there were points last year where I genuinely believe he was this kind of a threat, but he just didn't necessarily have the know-how to take advantage of it. And I really believe over the last couple of games he's started to figure that out, and that's what makes his setback so disappointing in a way, but again, so exciting that he's going to be back relatively soon, and I don't think it'll hurt his long-term trajectory. And I just wonder how the Nets, again, play without a guy who can really do that, because I think, as you point out, Josh Dinwiddie brings a little bit of that, but it's just not to the same level.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens in the next couple months. I mean, obviously, it's that Karis isn't going to be there, and realistically, probably ends the Nets' shot at the playoffs, but it does give more opportunity to guys to shine, and I'd like to see a guy like Kurtz get in the rotation and see what he can do. Spencer Dinwiddie is going to have more opportunity now. D'Angelo Russell is going to have more opportunity now. Alan Crabb, if he doesn't break out of his funk, this is it. There's no more excuses. I mean, if he goes the next 10 or 15 games and still plays this poorly, which I don't know how that's possible, to still shoot like 25% from the field and under 30% from three, then he's probably going to get benched. So it's put up or shut up for a lot of these guys that even though their play hasn't been exceptional this year, they were able to hide behind Karis just because he was such a breakout star. But now the limelight is going to be on them.
All right, let's take one final break, come back. We can talk about expectations for the Nets going forward. And if we have time and we are so inclined, we can get maybe a few other notes on this T-Wolves game, maybe a few notes on the Heat game coming up tomorrow. That next on the Locked On Nets podcast. You are Locked On Nets, your third and final segment. Karis LeVert, the good news is he is all right. only going to be out a couple of months, which is, again, still horrific, but not franchise-altering, merely season-altering. And Josh, on that train of thought, what do you kind of expect from the Nets from this point forward? Because I know you mentioned last segment this essentially ends their run at the playoffs, but I think the question is, how bad are you going to be? Because when we were under the impression that LeVert was out for the entirety of the season, my thought process was, okay, the only positive you can take from this is that you have your own pick and you can tank. You can try and get a top five pick in the draft. It's still early in the season. You only have 6 wins. There's plenty of time to get to the bottom of the barrel. But now they have that light of LeVert coming back at the end of the tunnel, and maybe that makes them a little bit less inclined to give guys like Karutz and Musa big minutes going forward. And I'm just wondering how you think they're going to strike that balance.
Yeah, from looking at this team, they could try to win as much as they want, but they're still not going to be that good. They just don't have they didn't really have the top-level talent before LeVert got injured, and now your best player goes down. It's going to be hard. I think that if he misses, let's say, the next 50 games, and they go better than 20 and 30, I'll be shocked. I think most likely we can expect somewhere around 16, 17 wins. I just don't see them. Even though they play hard, this is the Nets team that always has trouble putting it together in the closing minutes. And I think that's been a trend we've seen in recent years. And I can't imagine, even if they do play their heart out, that they're going to win too many games.
Yeah, I think the difference with that LeVert, and I guess the best measuring stick of how their ceiling is lowered, is you're not going to see them beat teams like the Denver Nuggets anymore. And it'll be much closer to last year, where that those perfectly played games where they execute down the stretch and everything goes right, they're going to be beating a team like the Miami Heat in those games. They're going to be beating like a mid-tier Eastern Conference or maybe like a mid-tier Western Conference playoff team when they're at their best, and their best against the elite in the NBA. I'm not even talking like Warriors tier, even like the notch below that, like Celtics, maybe the Sixers now, the Bucks. I think that they're still going to fall a little short for the most part, and maybe here or there they get a fluky win against a team like that, but I just don't believe they have the firepower anymore to compete on a night-to-night basis with the best in the NBA.
Definitely. I mean, this is a team that always plays hard under Kenny Atkinson, so there are going to be those minor victories here and there, a win over Charlotte on the road, let's say, or Miami, as you mentioned, but they're not going to be beating those big juggernauts, and I think it's tough if we would expect them to even be close to those types of teams.
All right. You know what? I think we could spend some time talking about the T-Wolves. We could spend some time talking about the Heat, but to me, that would almost feel disingenuous. I think the focus of this podcast is Caris LeVert, everything that comes out of that. And I think Nets fans, and again, it's such a strange sensation, because if he had just, like, let's just say he had like twisted his ankle or like suffered like the same type of like moderate to severe knee injury that D'Lo had last season, like, I think we'd be like heartbroken and very upset right now and be like, oh crap, the season's ruined. But just given how bad it looks, we're both pretty happy. So it's a very strange emotional state, but I think Nets fans, I hope the Nets team is doing the same. You should kind of count your blessings right now, because this really is the best case scenario. And just, I don't know, the way life goes, the way these injuries typically go when you see them, I find that it's so often is how it looks. And when you get that sinking feeling in your stomach that something terrible happened, it usually is because your instinct is usually correct. It usually is to that degree. And I mean, just as someone, I'm sure people who are listening to this podcast, and I mean, frankly, people who've been lifelong Nets fans have gone through much worse, but I just know through my life, like, I feel like every time I've gotten this sensation, it's ended really, really badly. The fact that it didn't is again, just, I think people should be really, really happy.
Yep, I am ecstatic. Nets fans, go enjoy the rest of your day. Know that Caris LeVert will, I mean, you can never say for certain, given the Nets' tendency to hold guys out for injuries even longer than they should, but this is a case where, you know, it's a really important player. We need to make sure that when he does come back, he's 100% healthy. Hopefully that's before the end of the year, but worst case, it seems like it's not anything career-threatening, and that he, even if things went very slow, he'd be 100% ready to go by the start of the 19-20 season. So it's a good day in Nets land.
All right, great note to end on. Again, I mentioned it a couple times over the last few weeks, but just wanted to say this is again, we kind of apologize for the lack of podcasts, and that is no fault of Josh's. It is entirely on me. It is just an incredible busy time professionally, which is really a rarity for me. So I'm trying to take full advantage of it. The next week is going to be kind of insane. Actually going to be in Philadelphia for Jimmy Butler's first game there. So if anyone is actually like a closeted Sixers fan listening to this, feel free to come down to the press area and say hi. If not, we will likely be back on this podcast on Sunday. I'm not sure if it's going to be me and Josh or just Josh. That'll depend on how things shake out for me over the next couple of days. And then following this Tuesday, we will be going back to a normal schedule here on out, likely going to be 4 to 5 days a week. So we really appreciate you sticking with us, and we'll have more podcasts for you soon. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Nets.